You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenci. Welcome to the program that puts his money where his fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Network. Let's do this thing as the countdown is on. The National Football League preseason now just 2.5 weeks away, man. That's right. The Dallas Cowboys and the Arizona Cardinals will kickstart things on August the 3rd in the Hall of Fame game. We're fired up for some football. We've got a little football talk on the program for you today. We'll talk about Ezekiel Elliott's latest incident and situation, and we'll also focus in on the Detroit Lions on today's program. A 9-7 football team last year that made the playoffs and lost at Seattle in the wild card round. We'll talk some Detroit Lion football on the show today. Steve Merrill will join us, as he does every Monday. We'll talk some Major League Baseball. Merrill's got his power poll. We'll take a look at the division chases, the big games that are on the board. Washington, Cincinnati are already in action right now. Washington put a 5 spot up in the first inning of playing that baseball game. We'll talk a little NASCAR with Steve as well. We'll talk more baseball with Tommy Hutton. Although Tommy was supposed to join us last week, so there's no guarantees. But I expect Tommy Hutton to join us on the program today. A lot of stuff to talk about Tommy Hutton with. Long time, the guy played forever, big league baseball forever. He was the Marlins analyst for 19 years, man. Loria didn't give him the 20th. The Scrooge that he is, got the old Loria screw job, did Tommy Hutton. But Tommy Hutton's been around a while. We'll talk baseball with Tommy Hutton. So, as I stated, the National Football League preseason is rapidly approaching. And the preseason kicks off in a couple of weeks, man, which means your fantasy drafts in the regular season are rapidly approaching. But I told you last week, you don't want to be betting any futures right now. We can talk about the futures. We can sort of project potential future talk about what's going to happen, but it's too early. Much too early to hold any fantasy drafts. I don't pull the trigger with my future bets until at least after the third preseason game. And same thing with fantasy drafts. You can have a fantasy football draft before the final preseason game. Starters don't play then anyways. But before then, you're crazy, man. There's too many things that can freaking happen along the way, man. Players are going to fail drug tests. Players going to get suspended. Players going to get arrested. We can go on, and it happens almost on a daily basis at this time of the year, which leads us to Ezekiel Elliott. As Elliott's been under the microscope since day one when he came into the National Football League. Anybody that followed him at Columbus with the Ohio State Buckeyes remembers. There are always murmurs about girls this and accusations about this and that. But, you know, we all know that Urban Meyer doesn't tolerate anything like that. So that's impossible, right? Yeah, right. Elliott was involved, or sort of involved. Maybe he wasn't involved. But there's a lot of smoke, it seems, around this kid repeatedly. It's like getting on a Snoop Dogg's tour bus or something. Something doesn't smell right. Or actually smells pretty damn good, probably, depending on your perspective. But there was a bar fight last night in Dallas. When would the bar fight happen? Like 3 in the morning. And Elliott was there. 30-year-old claims he was assaulted, potentially by Elliott, but sounds like it's one of these Ray Lewis deals. He was there. Was it really him? He was in charge. You know, yet it's going to be under further investigation right now. What the hell is he doing at a club at 3 in the morning right now, dude? Your first preseason game is in 17 days. You play for the Dallas freaking Cowboys, all right? Like, besides, like, the actual San Quentin prison football team, you guys have more arrests than anybody in a damn league. Urban Meyer might as well be your damn coach, which leads us to Adolphus Washington, a Buffalo Bills player. Now, he got arrested last week. What was his deal? I guess he had weed and he's carrying a concealed weapon. For some reason, he flashed a gun at a cop. A gun that he wasn't supposed to have at a cop. Where did he go to school? Who did he play for in college? Oh, yeah, that's right. Urban Meyer and Ohio State. I've warned people a million freaking times, and I don't just say this because I'm a Michigan fan, all right? Urban Meyer is a hell of a football coach. Urban Meyer wins football games. Urban Meyer doesn't win all these football games by drafting Boy Scouts, all right? Let's go back to his time in Florida. Let's go back to Florida. Never mind Aaron Hernandez, right, who shoots people in the face. 31 arrests, man. 31. 31 times when Urban Meyer players got arrested at Florida. You know, it continues into Ohio State. JT Barrett gets this, gets arrested for drug driving. How is he punished? I don't know. I guess he missed a half or something like that. Urban Meyer just doesn't give a damn. That's what it comes to. And you got to deal with the consequences if you take one of his kids after. And, you know, now the Dallas Cowboys have to worry about Ezekiel Elliott all the time, which leads me to ask you, what do you do with Ezekiel Elliott right now? Now, listen, I like the Dallas Cowboys' chances of winning the division again. I don't see any reason why they don't do it. I think the Giants are overhyped. I don't think the Eagles are ready yet. And I think the Redskins are about to regress. So I think the Dallas Cowboys can win this division again. I love the over 9.5 wins, but is Elliott going to get suspended? Now, we should note, he wasn't charged last night, but once again, you know, bad decision-making from Ezekiel Elliott, and this isn't the first time that he's made bad choices. Remember the time he decided to pull the chick's top down at Mardi Gras? He's lucky he didn't get charged with that. Like, the kid just doesn't get it, and until he gets nailed, he's not going to stop. So eventually, we know the kid is going to get nailed. He was already sort of kind of quietly under investigation. This has been going on forever with this dude. Do you take him? What do you do right now? Now, as far as our win total is concerned, even if Elliott is out, all right, let's just say hypothetically he's out for 3 or 4 games, I think McFadden and Alfred Morris can handle the load. That offensive line is so damn good, it's not going to be a problem. I think they can win football games without Elliott. But from a fantasy standpoint, I'm not a big draft star running back guys anyway, so I'm not really going to find myself in this position probably, but I do like him. I did like him, but I'd rather take David Johnson, who I know is not ripping chicks' tops down and getting into fights at 3 in the freaking morning. Hell, Le'Veon Bell, he might blaze one or two, but he hasn't been suspended yet. Although Le'Veon Bell last year missed 3 games and still finished with the 5th most rushing yards in the National Football League. There are a lot of decisions to make on the field, off the field, fantasy, reality, and everything else in between. Let's just hope if you're a Dallas Cowboy fan, Ezekiel Elliott makes the right decision next time. Game Time Decisions continues.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things. Just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
Game Time Decisions on Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci. A lot of stuff to get to on the program today. It's kind of a light night if you are a sports bettor, but there are a couple of options on the board. Of course, Major League Baseball and the NBA Summer League. I've spent a lot of time bashing Lonzo Ball. I've got to give credit where credit's due. The kid's been on fire the last couple of games. The Lakers are playing the Blazers tonight in the NBA Summer League Championship. Jesse Vargas, world champion boxer, was interviewed. Looked like he was on a golf course, and some dude like busted a mic in front of his face and asking about the Conor McGregor Floyd Mayweather fight. And Vargas, it's funny how the guy's a pro, and he's like, yeah, I'm gonna bet on that fight. He goes, it's 99.9999% that, you know, Mayweather's gonna win. Then he drops the bombshell. He goes, yeah, I heard Mayweather just got McGregor just got knocked out cold in sparring from Brandon Rios. So there's a little scoop right there. But the media is so in love with Connor, they're not going to bring that up. If it was Floyd, then, it's like, it's very, very one-sided the way this thing is being portrayed. We got NBA Summer League Final tonight. We got Tommy Hutton coming up. We got a Detroit Lion preview. Got some NASCAR and baseball talk with Steve Merrill. What's up, Steve?
Is that verified that McGregor got knocked out?
Well, it's a world champion boxer who's saying it, right? It's not like just a rumor per se. You know, Vargas has a lot of credibility. Why would he make it up? He just said, he goes, yeah, Rios knocked him out. He goes, the boxing world is small. You can't keep anything a secret.
Interesting. I mean, because my only 2 concerns with Mayweather being a sure thing lock, as we've talked about before a little bit, is that, well, first of all, the Pacquiao fight, we haven't talked about that because we did do a show that weekend, but
that was in Australia, though. Yeah, that was in Australia. That was an Australian screw job.
Well, I think I'm not so sure Pacquiao's not in on the fix. It's happened twice now, and he'll get a rematch and make even more money. The difference is he has six or seven losses now, and he actually likes to do a lot of good things with the money, so I'm not so sure he's not doing it to just give back more money to the Philippines. But Mayweather, with the perfect record and making 175, win or lose, probably, he doesn't need the rematch, and he doesn't want to tarnish that perfect record. So not too concerned about that. But the only other concern I would have is the 41-year-old age and the two-year layoff. But he was so good even just a couple years ago that even if he's down a notch, he's still top 10. McGregor wouldn't even be ranked in that division. So it's looking like a sure thing still. But, you know, in the boxing world, you never know.
Yeah, you know, you always have to. I'd be worried about the total. I'd be a little bit concerned about when the fight is going to end. That'll be a little bit risky. I think Floyd will be a little bit cautious. But, yeah, it's a sham, Steve. There's no way, you know, it's ridiculous.
The way they're promoting this just shows what a sham it is also. The fact that they have to hype it like they're hyping it tells you all.
Yeah, but the fact is society is a sham right now. People are stupid, right? People are stupid. I mean, Donald Trump trolled his way into the presidency. LeVar Ball has trolled his way into the consciousness. These two, everyone knows, oh, it's a stupid fight, but, you know, like, we're living in a freak show era right now. You know, give the people what they want. I can't argue with it. I think it's a stupid fight, but if you have you have 5 million people that are lining up saying, please take my $100 bill, that'd be ridiculous not to do it.
Well, that's the thing is, you know, whenever something seems 100% obvious, you know, for me, that's a huge red flag. But what is great about this situation is that the public's actually betting the underdog, you know, so we're actually going against the public, which, you know, I love to do. And I think we have a really strong play. So that's something I look for in baseball, basketball, and football. I love it when I love one side and then the public's on the other side. That bumps it up a notch for me. And that's actually what we have here. So even though it looks obvious to you and me, the fact that the public is on the other side makes me feel more comfortable about it. But, you know, end of the day, you're still laying, you know, 6 or 7 to 1, you know, to get back 100. You're risking 700. You're risking 7,000 to win 1,000 maybe. So that gives you a little bit of pause because even though the odds should be higher, there's still it's a big risk for a little reward, basically.
College football kicks off that afternoon. You can moneyline parlay Stanford and Rice or something.
There's actually three or four games this year on the 26th, which is a little unusual. I think there's several games that day.
Yeah, there's like five or six. One of them doesn't have a line yet, Portland State at BYU. You know, there's a few games. There's real teams like UMass and Hawaii, Oregon State at Colorado State, Stanford's at Rice for one reason or another, and Hawaii at UMass. But it's not a glamorous board, but it's a board. You know what? A lot of hype around South Florida actually coming into the year. They're playing on that Saturday night against San Jose State. So there's a little action going on. I talked about this the other night, Steve. If you're willing to wait for you fight fans, John Jones comes back. Most likely he's going to beat Daniel Cormier. That's on the 30th. You got to wait. But if you parlay John Jones, the greatest mixed martial artist of all time, with Floyd Mayweather, arguably the greatest boxer of all time, it's like a minus 155 parlay, Steve. It's not that bad. You get John Jones out of the way, and then you got Mayweather at minus 157 or something.
Yeah, what's Jones at, like minus 200 or
he's
so?
He's 250. Minus 250.
Yeah, mid to, yeah, as a 240
it's
or something.
It's going up,
yeah,
though. So. It's going as 260, 270, 280 now in some spots even.
But you get the same thing there. That the only concern you have with Jones, it's just like the Mayweather situation. He's been off for a while. He's always been in shape when he fights, but then he's had the off-field incidents in recent years. You just don't know exactly what you're getting with Mayweather or Jones. But if they're anywhere close to what they've been, they're both the two best ever in their disciplines. You know, so even if they're at 50 or 70%. We know he's better than McGregor at 70% in a boxing match.
Well, yeah, Cormier
too just doesn't match. He just doesn't match up well with Jones. He's so much smaller. Jones
and
would
older.
Have to make a lot of mistakes and turn it into a wrestling match, basically. Yeah.
That's the thing. Like Cormier could win. Like that's the Jones pretty much dominated in the first time. So I don't. You know, we'll see. You're right. Jones hasn't fought in a while, but he's so damn good. And the thing with Cormier, he's 39 years old. Jones just turns 30. There's a 9-year age difference here, and a significant one. And I got to tell you, man, Cormier, man, he's had more knee surgeries than Ben Roethlisberger. He's always coming off of some scope, some knee issue. But nevertheless, a lot of time to talk about the fights. Let's talk some baseball. You and I talked about this, Steve. Coming in and out of All-Star breaks, will it pour cold water on a hot team? Will a cold team heat up? coming out of the break and a couple of instances. Dodgers, doesn't seem to matter. I guess they're that damn good, Steve. pre-break, post-break, Dodgers just did their thing. They sweep the Marlins.
Yeah, well, the two teams we talked about both swept, the Dodgers and then the Cubs. You know, the Cubs are the team I said I keep thinking will flip the switch here in the second half. And now another team we talked about as well is the Orioles, who are about as ice cold as anybody going into the break.
Yep.
So what do we make of the Cubs sweeping the Orioles? You know, it might not mean much. Now, it was on the road in Baltimore, which I give them some credit for that. But the Orioles have just completely tanked. In fact, their starting rotation, along with the Cincinnati Reds, has the worst ERA in baseball. So still need to see what the Cubs can do, but obviously a good start for them and a very impressive start for the Dodgers, who do look like the team to beat right now.
Yeah, you mentioned the Cubs, so they get it done. They're on the road once again tonight against the Braves. John Lester versus Julio Teheran on the hill. Both pitchers have been hit hard as of late, but first start coming out of the break, obviously. Cubs bats could be coming alive, racked up 27 runs against Baltimore. Meanwhile, the Braves, they were one of the teams, man. That was the initial win total that I loved, that I told people. Love the Braves over 71.5. But that was only posted in Reno and in Vegas. By the time it hit offshore and it was copy and pasted, it was up to 76.5. So it wasn't any value left there. But Braves are a 500 team right now, 45-45. Pretty impressive. They're 500 team, playing good baseball, but you got two hot teams here. I do like the Cubs. The line is a little high, though.
Yeah, the thing about the Braves and the Twins also, last year for basically the entire season of my MLB power rankings, Minnesota and Atlanta flip-flop between 29th and 30th all season long. And you look, the Twins almost cracked the top 10 this year. The Braves have gotten close as well. Both teams are dramatically improved, and I think the public has been a little slow to catch on to both of them. We talk about the Rockies. They got as high as number 2 in my rankings a few weeks ago. I kept saying I didn't feel like they were for real. They got beat up by the Dodgers, and then they continued to lose after that. I still think there's some value with the team like Atlanta here in the second half. I think there's probably some value fading teams like Colorado and also Arizona in that division here in the next few months.
You got to figure eventually Arizona. Arizona really hasn't had that slide like Colorado recently had. So the Brewers, interesting. We've been focusing in on a lot on this. We talked last week. The Cubs were minus 200 despite being 5.5 back going into the break. They gained a game over the weekend. The Brewers took 2 of 3 over the weekend. But you know they're looking over their shoulder right now. We're going to find out a lot about the Brewers in the coming weeks. They're in Pittsburgh tonight. The Crew took 2 of 3 from the Phillies over the weekend, but they still dropped that game. Pittsburgh's not ready to wave that flag yet. Over the next, leading up to the trade deadline at the end of the month, Steve, these games are very critical. What do you make of the Brewers and the Pirates tonight?
Yeah, you know, I think Pittsburgh could be a little bit of a sneaky team here in the second half. Milwaukee has definitely overachieved. I mean, as we talked about last week, the Cubs still at minus 200 to win that division despite a losing record and trailing Milwaukee, but I think it was 5.5 games when the second half started. You feel like Milwaukee will regress at some time. Matt Garza actually pitched decent yesterday, which was a surprise to me. I actually had the over in that game. Both Helixson and Garza pitched better than expected. I still think Milwaukee is probably going to have to play catch-up at some point in this division if the Cubs continue to get hot here, as it looks like they might be. But, you know, Milwaukee's a good team. I've got them right now number 7 in my rankings, and we talked about this last week as well. They've been the third most profitable team in baseball this year against the money line, up over 17 units. So it's obvious that the odds makers and the public in general have not caught on because the prices have been too low.
All right, the American League Central is an interesting division. You mentioned the Twins. The Twins were in first place earlier in the year. Reality started to catch up to them a little bit. But the Kansas City Royals aren't going anywhere. They're not quitting. They're one of the hottest teams in baseball over the last month going into the All-Star break. And surprisingly enough, the Indians stumble out of the gate. They get swept by the Oakland Athletics. Outscored 17-6 in the process, trying to hold off the Twins and the Royals. They're kind of lucky. I mean, you know, they're still on the road, but it's not no trip. They just cross, they cross the bay. They cross the bridge. Now they get San Francisco. Matt Moore is a train wreck this year. So they're in a favorable spot tonight, the Indians. But without being stated, it's weird, man. The Indians are just 2-10 against the National League this year for some reason.
And that was a bad sweep. I mean, Oakland's not as good as Cleveland. Cleveland was favored in those games. They were actually a minus 240 favorite in the game they lost Saturday night. And that was with Kluber pitching extremely well on top of that, and they still lost that game as a big favorite. And now they're taking on a terrible San Francisco team. If they don't do well in this series here the next couple of days, that would be a real red flag for me. You know, we talked about teams sometimes struggle in the second half. The Dodgers and Cubs came out strong. The Indians did not. And, in fact, my prediction was L.A.-Cleveland for the World Series before the first half ended. So, well, I'm going to keep a close eye on the Indians here the next couple of weeks, especially the next couple of days. By the way, they got swept by Oakland, and Oakland traded two of their closers yesterday to Washington. You know, we talk about the Nationals needing bullpen help. They picked up Ryan Madsen and Sean Doolittle from Oakland. The A's still got the sweep even without their bullpen intact yesterday.
The A's are a weird team like that. You know, you look at their roster, you're like, oh, they're not winning. And then they go on these little streaks. They're a good home team as well. Oakland, for some reason, they just play well at home. Tampa in Oaktown tonight. All right, Steve, a team that is heating up a little bit of a streak, the Seattle Mariners right now. Nobody ever talks about the Mariners. They're obviously not in contention in the American League West this year, but they're sort of lurking in the wild card picture. They don't get a lot of mainstream media attention, but they have won four in a row. They get a rare road sweep against the Chicago White Sox. They've won four in a row. They've won five of six. That's the good news. Bad news is they're in Houston. They're big, big dogs tonight. It doesn't make any sense that they're going to win. McCullers is 7-2 with a 3.05 ERA so far this year. But I almost want to just roll the dice a little bit. They call it gambling for a reason and take the Mariners plus 195 tonight.
I actually think there's some value at plus 195. You know, what's tricky about baseball and when we're doing these single-game predictions is that, you know, we can be wrong 60% of the time and we're going to still make money at plus 195. So it's tough to give someone a selection on a, you know, 2-1 underdog because, yeah, they're not going to probably win, but I still think that line is too high. So, you know, if you're taking a long-term perspective like an investor should, you know, as far as baseball, I think this line is too high tonight. I think Houston still has some holes. I feel like they're more likely to regress a little bit here in the second half than the Dodgers. I've got, you know, L.A. and Houston 1-2 in my power rankings, the Nationals third. Of those three teams, I think Houston's the one I'm a little suspect on still. I've actually got Seattle now ahead of Texas as far as my power rankings in that division. Felix Hernandez started to pitch well. He really had been inconsistent earlier this year. He's given up just one run, though, in his last 11 innings, back-to-back wins. If he continues to pitch like he used to back in the day, you know, Seattle could be a little bit of a value play here in the next few months.
Speaking of value plays, we knew that Joe Gibbs Racing was eventually going to win a damn race. I'm a little bit frustrated. I was all aboard the Kyle Busch bandwagon, but in hindsight, probably should have sprinkled a little bit on all the drivers, with the exception of Suarez. Kenseth and a track record there. Busch as good as he is. And Denny Hamlin gets it done. Joe Gibbs finally wins. He was 7-1 when we spoke on Friday. Denny Hamlin locks in his playoff spot with his first win since last November in Texas.
Well, and Hamlin then crashes his car in qualifying practice before qualifying. He crashes his primary car, has to go to the backup, and basically point blank says that this car is not nearly as good. Even yesterday, Sunday morning before the race, he said his backup car was not nearly as good. So I really pretty much scratched him because of that from fantasy lineups, you know, from any chance of winning, even though he was still one of the five or six top favorites in the odds. He was like 8-1 or so. So it just goes to show you never know. He wasn't expecting to win even, I don't think. Kyle Busch had the best car and got a speeding penalty down pit road that really threw him off. Martin Truex Jr. had the other best car all day. For the second week in a row, it was Kyle Busch and Truex. And for the 20th time in a row, Kyle Busch finds a way not to win. He's now lost 35 straight races. That's the longest streak in his career. It was a year ago that he won at the Brickyard, this week coming up. Hamlin hadn't won since last fall at Richmond. Kenseth ran Route 6. Suarez, Carl Edwards' car, the 19 car, he ran 8th. It was also announced that Eric Jones will take over Kins at the number 20 spot, so that's official now. Eric Jones finished dead last, even though he had a good car. So, you know, we talked about Kenseth having problems. Maybe he actually ran well. Eric Jones, who will now be in that car, had a terrible run.
I thought it would be ironic if Kenseth would have gotten Joe Gibbs' first win of the season. Screw you, Gibbs. Yeah. As you announced, I'm on my way out. You mentioned Kurt Busch. You know, I've been riding Kyle Busch, and it's unbelievable with this guy. Like you said, he's just finding ways. And not only did he get nailed for speeding, he got nailed twice. Like, how's that? He did it twice. He got nailed twice. He ends up finishing in 12th place. Eventually, he's going to win. And, you know, when I heard you say he hasn't won since the Brickyard last year, incidentally, that's where they're going next week, Steve. So I don't know. Is you know, he's got to win a damn race eventually, this guy. But he's looking good for the playoffs because he keeps racking up points.
And I'll tell you who's not looking good for the playoffs is Joey Logano, who had the encumbered win earlier this year, so it doesn't count for the automatic bid. He is now 52 points out from the 16th spot. He's almost getting to where he has to win a race now. And I was thinking about this, Gabe. He and Keselowski were dominant the first 2 months of the season.
Yeah.
And then that encumbered win happened, and they've been way, way worse. Keselowski had been the best driver at New Hampshire the last several years, and he wasn't all that competitive yesterday. I'm thinking that whatever they were doing, they got caught with, and they're not doing it anymore, and they can't even run top 10. And they're a Ford, and the Chevys are struggling. Jimmy Johnson's had only three top fives all season. There were the three races he won. He hasn't been top five in any other race. Chase Elliott hasn't won yet. Casey Kane and Earnhardt are way off this year. I think Toyotas, they have a new design this year. The Toyota cars are just faster. And you saw yesterday, Truex Jr. was just blowing away the field again. He got a flat tire. That's the only reason he didn't win yesterday. Kyle Busch had speeding and a jack problem on pit row. He would have won. We really have to look at Toyotas right now. And probably even Kevin Harvick's not competitive right now in Fords. So I really think it's Toyota or nothing at this point.
Great, great, great point that you raised, Steve, about the pre-inspection bust. And then the post-inspection results definitely has to be something correlated. It's almost like we often talk about it in MMA, Steve, you know, the pre-drug testing and post-era. It's amazing how some guys' records aren't the same as it was
exactly.
A couple of years ago when it was anything goes. We got to get out of here, but I mentioned the Brickyard's up next. Always cool to see these guys going to the Brickyard, one of my favorite races.
Yeah, it's a big, big track. It's as big as Daytona and Talladega, but it's flat. So it's like a flat track. It's a 2.5 mile flat track. Pocono, a little bit of a comparison. And, you know, we actually saw What's-His-Face get the win there a few weeks ago. Ryan Blaney, his only career win. So it'll be interesting to see if Blaney maybe can get Ford into victory lane this week.
Yeah, I like it, though. It's part oval, sort of part road course. It's a little bit of everything in one, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely unique, and I expect Toyotas to be fast again. Kyle Busch is good, and Truex is good on these tracks as well.
All right, always a pleasure. Look forward to breaking it down with you, Steve.
Thanks, Gabe.
There's Steve Merrill with us. Always great talking NASCAR baseball with Steve. We'll continue our baseball conversation. Tommy Hutton coming up next.
Quarterback to receiver hookups, running back depth analysis, rookie values in dynasty leagues, deep sleepers, training camp battles. These are just a few of the in-depth features you will find inside the 2017 RotoExperts.com Exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package. Plus, you get a full year of in-season coverage as a bonus. Get the Exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package now at RotoExperts.com. Enter free radio at checkout for your special discount.
Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenza. We'll get to our Detroit Lions preview in a couple of moments, but let's continue talking baseball right now with a man that started his career in 1966, played his final game in 1981. He's like Mickey Rooney. His career spanned like, you know, three decades, three of these different eras of baseball. Longtime broadcaster, and it's perspective. It depends on where you were. To me, Tommy Hutton was a member of the bus squad in Montreal. That's what I remember, Tommy Hutton. We had Ian Cameron on. He goes, Tommy Hutton, I grew up listening to him with Don Chevrier, Blue Jays baseball. And then, of course, there's a generation of people that watched and listened to Tommy in South Florida. Let's bring in a Tommy Hutton right now. Tommy, welcome to the Fantasy Sports Network. How you doing?
You know, I'm doing great, and I was just thinking when you were in the game for 51 years, you kind of carry over all kinds of different things, and both as a player and broadcaster. So over the years, there aren't too many people in the game that I haven't run into one time or another.
And how many people, though, when you were around, are still around right now in the game? From players, like, are they coaches now and broadcasters, et cetera?
You know, there are a few. There are a few that aren't with us anymore either. I'm getting at that stage. But there are quite a few that have stayed in the game as broadcasters, a lot of coaches, a guy who's been on the field for a long time. Always enjoy when I hook up with him, talking to him. Larry Boa, still a bench coach with the Phillies now, and we were teammates for a long time with the Phillies. But I see Andre Dawson, or I did when I was doing Marlins games. used to see Andre Dawson all the time. Before he passed away, the kid, Gary Carter, and I were neighbors. We used to play golf all the time. So, yeah, we run into a lot of guys. I see Bill Gullickson all the time. He lives around the corner from me. So a lot of expos in the area.
That's amazing. That's like, it's like the old West Palm Beach days or something. It's like, yeah, it's like spring training. So as I stated, I grew up with the Expos and the Dodgers, actually. I was an Expo fan as well as the Dodgers. So I remember you as part of the bus squad. But I wanted to ask you, just because honestly, I didn't even realize you went all the way back to 66. And I find a manager that doesn't get talked about enough. And, you know, it's easy for us to forget past history is Walter Alston. You know, Tommy Lasorda, the Dodgers have always been so consistent with their managers over the years. I think Dave Roberts doing a great job right now. But what was Alston like? What was it like being a young player playing for a legend like Alston at the time?
Well, it's really interesting because as a young player and in that era, I signed in 64, 65. I was in the minor leagues, got called up in 66. You didn't say a word. Here I show up in the clubhouse. I was a September call up, and there are guys like Koufax and Drysdale and Willie Davis and Johnny Roseborough, and these were the guys. You got to remember too. I grew up in Los Angeles. I grew up about 15 minutes from Dodger Stadium, so this was a team that in junior high and high school I followed them when the Dodgers came to California. So Walter Alston was very stoic, completely different than Tommy Lasorda. And that's another story because Tommy Lasorda was just beginning his scouting career, and he actually signed me. He was the scout that signed me. And I ended up playing for Tommy 3 years in AAA. But with Alston, you just never – I mean, he always got me confused with Sutton. It was either Sutton, Hutton. He never said Hutton. He never said Hutton to Sutton, but he'd always say Sutton to me. So he'd get me confused all the time.
And what are you going to say to him? And hey, Don Nothing. Sutton, Hall of Famer, too. And I'm sure Don was scared, too, of him, too, right?
Well, yeah, because he was a young player, too. I mean, Don Sutton was so incredible. Our first year of professional baseball was in Santa Barbara, California, in the California League. Don Sutton was on that team, and about the middle of June, he was 8-1, had an ERA below 2, and they called him up to Double A. He won 15 games in Double A, and here's a kid out of junior college. He pitched over 250 innings his first year of pro ball, won 23 games, and after that 65 season, he was in the big leagues the rest of the time.
250 innings, amazing. I've heard Bill Lee say time and time again, you know, the fact that pitchers can go longer, and that's why they're getting injured. But that's a debate for another story. Now, having grown up in Montreal, and it's crazy, Tommy, I grew up in Montreal, then moved to L.A. So you and I have been in some same cities here, okay? So growing up in Montreal, Dave Van Horn, Duke Snider, Ken Singleton.
You're giving me stories with each name. Dave Van Horn and I, before I stopped doing Marlins games, Dave and I live in the same area, and we used to ride to Marlins Park together every game. So Dave and I have a great friendship. It was a treat to be able to work a little bit with Duke Snider when I started broadcasting, and then Duke was broadcasting when I was playing.
Yeah.
And then Kenny Singleton, in 1986, I believe, was the first year that TSN did some Expos games. Kenny Singleton and I did those games, so he was my first partner, and I was his first introduction in doing broadcasting, and he's gone on, and he does an incredible job doing the Yankees right now.
Oh, he really does. He's so great. And, you know, I moved to L.A., and I had a chance. It was Vin and Don Drysdale at the time. So I've been spoiled, and we had people. How about a quick Don Chevrier story? We had guys saying, man, I remember him every week on CBC with Don Chevrier, Blue Jay games.
Hey, we used to bow down to Don Chevrier, and we said, we're in the presence of the voice of curling. Don had a great way, a smooth way of doing games. He allowed the analyst, which on TV you have to do their job. He just had a smooth way of transitioning everything, and he was a joy to work with.
Listen, you were 19 years with the Marlins, and I know you're too classy. You're a great guy. So, I'm not going to put you in the hot seat or anything, but there's no I'm not Jeffrey Loria's biggest fan. I mean, a guy's suing an old man right now and trying to seize his house, Tommy. Like, at what end, And like I said, I'm from Montreal. I don't single-handedly blame him for the demise of the Expos like everyone does. But, as I say, I'm not their biggest fans. Where are you at right now? Is there any ill will towards them? Frustration? Would you like to work with another team? Where are you at right now with this? Because, and your story that the Marlin players thought you were too critical. You weren't too critical. Secondly, you were in the clubhouse. And listen, I did the Expos postgame show, right, in their last years. And I was critical. I used to bitch about stuff. And they always tell me point blank, at least we see you down here. You come out on the field for BP every day. They said, not like some of your buddies that sit in a press box all night. And I had no fear of going down there. And you weren't overly negative. Like, how sensitive are today's players, Tommy, in which they got their girlfriends listening and their parents? What did he say about me during my at-bat? What can you tell us, Tommy?
Well, it's very different now. I mean, I can just think what Tommy Lasorda would tell me if I complained about what a broadcaster would say. And you're right. I was down on the field every day. And I look at it this way. You heard tones, or I heard tones, that, I was negative. I don't think I was negative. I was never negative toward the organization. There were things that I disagreed with a lot, and we were always pretty down the middle on the air. I think I was honest, and I think sometimes honesty is construed by players as negativity.
Yeah.
So if that be the case, then, hey, I have no problem with the way I did games. As you said, 19 years with the Marlins. I think if they sell – and a new owner comes in, I would reach out to do some part-time stuff. I'm at a point in my life now, I don't want to work a full 150, 160-game schedule anymore, but I would reach out to new ownership to see if they had an interest in bringing me back and doing some things with the club.
I got to tell you, too, as you stated, I would have lasted like 3 weeks, all right? Like, you're being positive with some things you disagree with. Next to you, Tommy, I don't know, maybe Sean Spicer has the hardest job.
You got to remember the last 6 years that I was there were under 500 seasons, were some miserable years. There were changes made that we would bite our tongue up in the booth, and they brought in Dan Jennings to be the manager. I can say right now, I thought that was ridiculous.
Yeah.
We didn't say that. My partner and I didn't say that on the air because, number one, we know Dan. He's a good baseball man, but he just didn't belong in the dugout as the manager. But, we played it down the road. But anyway, hey, I've had a great year and a half, by the way, just enjoying a regular lifestyle.
Yeah, I follow you on Twitter. I'm jealous. You're playing golf with Steve Carlton. You're at the pool with your grandkids. You got to enjoy life. You've been in baseball for, 51 years, Tommy? Smell the flowers a little bit. Before we get you out of here, Dodgers are smoking hot right now. I think they are the team to beat. I love Bip Roberts from a managerial standpoint. He just has that special touch. He connects with these guys. Who's the team to beat?
Well, it's got to be them. Them, Houston, and Washington, to me, are the strongest teams. I mean, Houston's playing so great, you wonder if they can sustain that and do that in the playoffs. Washington might have the best pitching for postseason. Now, it depends if the Dodgers get somebody, because you need that 1-2, sometimes a 1-2-3 punch as far as starters in the postseason. So if I look at it that way, I like Washington, but right now, the Dodgers and the Astros are far above everybody.
Hey, Tommy, pleasure talking baseball with you. Let's do it again. Thanks for the time, man.
Hey, my pleasure, Gabe. Talk to you anytime.
There's Tommy Hutton with his great stuff with Tommy. We take a quick break. We come back. We talk some Detroit Lion football.
Ezekiel Elliott. Carl Anthony Towns. Corey Seager. Those are the rookies of the year, much like the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. The fastest growing fantasy sports network on radio is completely free, 24/7. Listen to us live at fntsy.com/radio or download the app right now in the Google Play Store or on iTunes.
Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci. Let's talk some Detroit Lion football. Now, first things first, I should note I am a Buffalo Bill fan, but I've always had a soft spot in my heart for the Detroit Lions, like most Bills fans do, and I know that a lot of Lion fans reciprocate the love back for the Bills. Let's be real. It's like we're cousins. Yeah, we're cousins. We're both middle-of-the-road franchises. We both finish 7-9, 8-8 every year. Neither of us have ever won a Super Bowl, and we're both in broken, depressed cities. So we have a lot in common. Not to mention Ralph Wilson, longtime owner of the Buffalo Bills, actually lived in Detroit. And don't forget when the Bills stadium was snowed in, where'd they play their home game? In Detroit. So I just tell you this, Lion fans, to remind you that I like your team, and I'm a diehard Michigan Wolverine fan as well, but we have to be real when breaking each team down. The Lions were 9-7 last year. They lost the wild card game in Seattle. They're 50-1 to win the Super Bowl. Never made a Super Bowl before. 25-1 to win the NFC. Obviously never won the NFC before. Plus 600 to win a division. Their win total is 7.5. I see 7.5, and I'm thinking I want to go over here with the Detroit Lions, but let's break it down and see if we can. Matt Stafford is a great fantasy quarterback, but he struggled to win big games over his career. I saw a stat, and I can't confirm it. I didn't have time to double and triple check it. I did double check it. 5-46 in his career against teams with a winning record. Holy crap. That's not very good. You know what else is not very good? The Detroit Lions run game. You know, the ground game is non-existent, and it has been ever since Barry Sanders ran off into the sunset. And I just don't see Amir Abdullah and Theo Reddick really doing any real damage on the ground here. You know, we can wait for Abdullah. People, is this the year? Is this the year? No, it's not going to be the year. Riddick's nice. He's great at catching passes out of the backfield. I'll give him that. But not scaring anybody, man. They rush for like 81 yards a game. That's not good enough. And it puts too much pressure on Matt Stafford, who's not going to have Anquan Boldin and his 8 touchdowns to throw to. Anquan Boldin was his big go-to wide receiver, big body. You look at Marvin Jones, you look at Golden Tate. Neither of these dudes are big dudes. It creates a problem in the red zone, which means Eric Ebron could have more success in the red zone. They're going to try to incorporate Ebron into the offense more in the red zone, but... Listen, I've been on the Eric Ebron bandwagon for a couple of years. He is what he is. He's not going to be as good as we thought he was. He's not as bad as some people said he was earlier in his career. He's okay. A lot of fantasy guys really love him this year. And in fact, Pat Mayo told me that he thinks Ebron's like a breakout star sleeper this year. I don't see it. You know, he's good. He's okay. But he's like the Lions himself. He's good, but not great. All right? Golden Tate, though, has been great for the Detroit Lions. And this surprised me. As much as it surprised me to see that Stafford's record was 5-46 against that team to win a winning record, was the fact that Golden Tate, you know, over the last 3 seasons in the National Football League, there are only 5 players who have caught more balls than Golden Tate has. Julio Jones, Odell Beckham, Antonio Brown, Jarvis Landry, and Demaryius Thomas. And he's got the 6 most catches in the last 3 years. With Anquan Boldin gone, it's going to be interesting to see how they handle this. You know, if Theo Reddick stays healthy, it's going to be a lot of dinks and dunks out of the backfield. I still think that Golden Tate, guy brings in about 90 balls a year. He'll probably still bring in about 80 or so. Riddick, very, very good wide receiver for a running back. But the ground game is non-existent, all right? They were ranked 30th in the league. They ran for 81 yards a game. I'm not the biggest Abdullah fan, to be honest with you. The thing with the Lions is they play a lot of cold-weather teams, man. You're playing outside against the Bears. You're playing outside against the Packers of the world. You got to be able to run the football a little bit, and Detroit's just never been able to do that. I was surprised to see this. The Lions only scored 20.7 points per game last year. They need to do a lot better on offense. They kind of look the same to me. Are they a better offense this year? No. You can argue that they're a worse offense. They lost Anquan Boldin. And Bolden's old, but he had 8 touchdowns for them. So this offense is okay. It's not great. They'll probably be a little bit better than the 20.7 points they scored. Last year, their defense, 13th-ranked defense, if we're going by points allowed last year, they gave up 22.6. That's not too bad, actually. They didn't play bad defensive football. They're only putting up 20 points a game, though. So their plus-minus differential is not on the right side of things here. Lions' big weakness on defense is they don't get any pressure on the quarterback. And it's funny because the Lions have a very good secondary, all right? Slay is a stud. They've got a good secondary, but they don't get any pressure on the quarterback. 26 times in 16 games. Not good enough. Second worst rushing production in the National Football League. I love the Davis pick from Florida. The kid's a rock-solid linebacker. Lawson is solid as well. Their special teams is shaky. Prater's okay. Not great like everybody else. You get where I'm going with this thing. Their punt return game is terrible. They averaged 24 yards. Their longest punt was 24 yards. Crazy. Their longest punt return of the year, 24 yards. All right, let's get to the schedule. The schedule is not a killer. They ranked 21st out of the 32 teams. They only played 4 teams that were in the playoffs last year, but I don't really buy into the strength of schedule stuff as much as a lot of people do. I think everyone's schedule is generally tough. It is what it is. You're playing every team in a National Football League. They play 4 teams who are in the playoffs, Green Bay, Atlanta, Steelers, and the Giants. They got 4 nationally televised games. They only play back-to-back road games once. It's pretty manageable. But if you go down the schedule, it looks like a lot of splits. All right, they open up against the Cardinals. They could win that game. They could lose that game. I don't know. You know, let's give them a win. You know, they go to the Giants. They're probably going to lose. They host the Falcons. They're probably going to lose. They go to Minnesota. They're probably going to lose. They really could be 1-3 after 4 weeks. Maybe 2-2. I don't see a 3-1 here. After that, versus Carolina, at the Saints, versus the Steelers, at the Vikings. That's another 2-2 right there. That's another 2-2. Weeks 10 through 12, they have a chance to rack up some wins. They host the Browns, they go to the Bears, they host the Vikings, and then they're at the Ravens after that. Like, they're going to have to make up some ground, and they're going to have to go 3-1 during that run. The last 4 is not easy. At Tampa versus the Bears, at the Bengals versus the Packers on New Year's Eve. Listen, I think they're going to be 7-7 going into the final 2 weeks of the season, at Cincinnati, and then hosting Green Bay. They might be able to get to 8-8. I think this is an 8-8 football team, but I'm in no hurry to bet it. I wish I loved it more because it's only 7.5, but I just can't pull the trigger. I think the Detroit Lions are a 7-9 or an 8-8 football team this year because I think the Minnesota Vikings are going to be that good. So they're not as good as the Packers. They're not as good as the Vikings, in my opinion. 7-9, maybe 8-8. I don't see 9-7 this year for the Lions. Game time decisions continues.
It's the summer, but you can already feel the howl of the winter wind. You don't want to go to the beach. You want to break out that heavy coat and head for the stadium parking lot because nothing makes you feel warmer than football season. But you don't have to wait for the calendar to flip a few times at rotoexperts.com, where fantasy football season has already started. The award-winning team at Roto Experts has you ready for the new campaign with the return of the exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package for 2017. Packed with tons of in-depth insights from the industry's top experts, we get you fully prepared for a championship campaign with a deluxe draft package that includes projections, strategy articles, sleepers, busts, a cheat sheet generator, and so much more. And you're guaranteed additional access throughout the regular season. So put your gloves on now, even while it's hot outside, and get into mid-season form. Go to rotoexperts.com and register for the 2017 Exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package. Enter code FREERADIO at checkout for a very special discount.
All right, it's time for our plays of the day. Let's start off in Baltimore with an ice-cold Baltimore Oriole baseball team. They struggled going into the All-Star break. They've struggled coming out of the All-Star break. They can't get anybody out, man. Give me the Texas Rangers tonight at -105. Blue Jays and Red Sox. Really, the game's a pick 'em? I know that Marcus Stroman's one of the hottest pitchers in Major League Baseball right now, but I can't pass up the Red Sox in a -110 range against a team as erratic as the Blue Jays are. I know the Astros are red hot. I know that Lance McCullers is on the hill, but the Mariners have won 5 of 6. They swept the board coming out of the break. +195, they call call it gambling for a reason. The Royals have been scorching. Give me the Royals against the Tigers. All right, it's the NBA Summer League Championship game from Las Vegas tonight. And I told you all you Lonzo Ball haters that the kid was going to be awesome. I told you that the kid could play. And I told you he was going to lead the Lakers to glory. All right? No shoes are badass, man. No, I didn't tell you any of the above, but he has been kicking ass. He's a little banged up, though. It's not guaranteed he's going to play. I think he will play tonight. How are we going to get in front of this Lakers magic at the Summer League? Looks like this son of a bitch might win the Summer League title. And let's go over the number. May the winners be yours.